Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24. Welcome to the ITSP Magazine Podcast Network. You are about to listen to the After 40 podcast with Dr. Deborah Heiser. Whether you're seeking inspiration, guidance, or a fresh perspective on the rich possibilities life offers after 40, this podcast is your go-to source.
Welcome to After 40. If you're new here, welcome back. And if you haven't been here before, I hope you'll check out all of the previous episodes. Today, I'd like to welcome Dr. Joel Weinberger. He is the author of The Unconscious, a researcher, a clinical psychologist, and a consultant for business and for political messaging. Wow. Welcome. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Heiser.
I'm really excited to learn more about the unconscious. I think that most of us don't give it much thought, but it's important in our everyday lives. Can you give us a little bit of an overview about the unconscious?
I'll try. So the first thing you have to know about the unconscious is basically that there is no such thing as the unconscious. Everything we do, everything we think, everything we feel is partly conscious and partly unconscious. Sometimes the mix leans more towards the conscious side. Sometimes the mix leads more towards the unconscious side, but there's no special piece of your head where the unconscious lives and another piece of your head where the conscious lives. And it's normative. It's involved in everything you see, do, think, and feel.
So how would anyone benefit from understanding more about the unconscious and how it relates to our lives?
Well, first of all, since everything has an unconscious aspect to it, for better or for worse, or for little or for greater, it's good to realize that so that you know that your behavior is not entirely under your conscious control, and you can understand better when you behave and it doesn't quite make sense to you or when you do things automatically. I give an example of how it's all mixed up just so that everyone can get it, I hope. So you and I are having a conversation, Dr. Heiser, and you're conscious of what I'm saying, I presume, and you understand what I'm saying, and I'm conscious of seeing you on the screen. But if I ask you, how do you understand what I'm saying? You have no idea. If I ask myself, where did these words come from that I'm speaking? I have no idea. So even though what we're doing has a very strong conscious aspect to it, in fact, it has a very big unconscious aspect because the words came from my head somewhere and the understanding of the words came from your head somewhere. Now imagine other things like when you're just walking around doing your day, half of what you do, more than half, most of what you do takes place unconsciously, implicitly. You go through your routine. You react to people in certain ways. You meet someone, you immediately know whether you're going to like them or don't like them. It could change over time, but everybody has an immediate gut reaction. You watch messaging on TV or on the social media. It affects you. People's appearance affects you. People's gender affects you. Everything affects you. And it would benefit you to realize that that's the case, so that you're in a position to better deal with it, and to deal with it in a way that's more beneficial to you.
So basically, when we walk down an aisle of a store, we're shopping, are we affected by our unconscious?
Sure we are. Why do you think that stuff in the store is different colors, different shapes, different logos? You know, for example, if you think about the tagline of Adidas, the other sneaker company.
Nike,
thank you. Just do it. Think about that. What does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. What am I just doing that has to do with sneakers? But what's happening is our mind is organized associatively in terms of associative networks, they're called. So what happens is you have associations to that phrase, just do it. It sounds like you're independent, you're autonomous, you can get things done, you can succeed at anything, because those are the associations. You then connect those associations with the product, in this case, Nike. And you suddenly like Nike, and you gotta have a pair, and just do it has nothing to do with anything. And I could go on to other taglines that politicians use, that businesses use. If, for example, there was a tagline, it's funny I said Adidas because they used it. Their tagline was for a while, impossible is nothing. And you probably haven't heard that one because it doesn't lead to good associations. It has the word impossible in it. Nobody likes things that are impossible. It has the word nothing in it. So now you're associating to nothing and to impossible. And then when you say impossible is nothing, it's got to be a double negative. You got to think it through. You got to make, by the time that's all over with, your mind is no longer interested in it. So it's very interested in just do it. It's totally uninterested in impossible is nothing. And this affected you and you didn't know.
So this could be the case with aging and midlife as well, that we could have all kinds of messages or taglines or slogans that might affect us unconsciously as well. Is that correct?
Well, I'll give you an experiment that my friend and in my mind, the best social psychologist in the world, John Bartsch, has done. He had people unscramble the words bingo, forgetful, and Florida. They were all mixed up letters. He had them unscramble them. And that's it. That was the study. Another group did some other random words. And then they left. And he timed them walking down the hall, and they walked more slowly after unscrambling those words. In other words, unconsciously, those words, they knew they were unscrambling them. They knew what the words were. That was all conscious. What was unconscious was the effect that those words had. By activating your network for the elderly, you became slower, and they literally became slower.
Wow. So that's unbelievable. And how long ago did he do that research?
It's got to be 20 years by now. I don't have the date in front of me. It's been replicated. It's turned out to be a little more complex. It depended on your attitude about the elderly and so on. Nonetheless, the effect is genuine. And that happens to us all the time. We see an attractive face. We tend to like that person more. That's why movie stars are good looking. They play like a waiter or a bouncer or a business person. They don't have to be gorgeous to play those parts, but we like them better. And so we're more interested in watching the movie. We may not realize that, or we may be conscious that we like how they look, but we're not conscious that that makes us more interested in the movie and to like the character more. Likewise, someone older, you can get an association of wisdom and comfort, or you can get association of decrepitude and discomfort, because you don't want to be old, depending on which set of associations it activates.
I know there's an implicit test that you can take online called the Harvard Implicit Test.
The Implicit Association Test, it's called, IAT.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it is, well, if you go online, you would go to the Harvard Implicit Test. You can Google that and it'll come up. And you can take a very short online test to see if you're biased against aging. What do you think about that?
Well, what the test actually measures is the strength of your associations to, in this case, aging, connected with good and bad. And most people associate aging with bad because none of us want to get older. I shouldn't say none of us. Many of us don't want to get older. We associate getting older with being physically more frail. And so we end up having an easier time making negative associations to the elderly as opposed to positive associations to the elderly. And if you have negative associations, you're not going to want to interact with someone that triggers negativity in you. So that's where the bias comes in. But the direct effect is actually associative. And then because of those associations, you behave in a negative way.
You know, I've given my students that test every semester, and every year everyone comes out biased against the elderly, and in essence we're biased against ourselves. You know, we all hope to become elderly, but we're all biased against the elderly.
Yes, well, I have a personal feeling about that, since I'm not a kid anymore, And nonetheless, I too am biased against the elderly. So I'm literally biased against myself. And that's true, by the way, of different minority groups because of the associations that our society sets up for them. I mean, there are societies where being elderly was associated with wisdom and leadership, not ours, but there have been such societies where the word old, an elder, was considered a compliment. This is one of the elders of the community. Didn't mean that they lived in a retirement home and watched television all day. It meant that you can count on them for advice. They sat in the council. They helped make decisions. So it depends on the culture that you grow up in. But in ours, it's often not positive.
It seems counterintuitive to be biased against yourself. Why would we be?
Because the associations that we learn, because we learn these associations unconsciously. For example, if I asked you or anyone, what are your associations to being old? My guess is that a lot of negative words would pop up because that's what we're inundated with in our environment. That's, by the way, true of any minority. All of you know what the stereotype of any minority group is, be it woman, be it African-American, be it Jewish, be it Muslim, whatever it is. Not, you might not necessarily believe them, but you know what they are. As soon as you know what they are, they're in your head. And if they're in your head, given the right triggering mechanism, they can be activated. And elderly is no different. So we have an image of elderly is over the hill. That's a major association. Elderly is forgetful, bingo, in Florida. And other than Florida, maybe bingo, I don't know. Those are not positive, and you're going to have a negative reaction.
So does the conscious and the unconscious thinking tend to match?
You know, often it does, but sometimes it doesn't. When it does, you have a kind of two forces going in the same direction. When they don't, and you have them going in opposite directions, for example, with some minority groups where you don't believe yourself and are consciously not biased, but unconsciously biased, how that ends up working is when you're consciously thinking about it, when you're focused on it, you will behave in line with your conscious processing. When you're just doing your thing and just living your life and not focused on something, then you will behave in accord with your unconscious processes, which, by the way, is most of the time.
Can you give me an example of that?
Okay. So I'm trying to think of a good example of okay. So you know that you need to perform a task. And somehow you'd rather watch TV, eat potato chips, or stare into space or do nothing or whatever. And we know that many of us do that. However, when suddenly you realize I need to get this done and you're focused, then you're able to do it. So that's a reason why in students tend to cram, because when they're just living their lives, it doesn't occur to them to study because unconsciously they want to not do that. Consciously, they want to do it, but they don't do it anyway because they're not focused. And then suddenly the test is tomorrow, or the report is due tomorrow, or some kind of presentation at a business is due tomorrow, or you got to be at the doctor tomorrow, or whatever it happens to be. Suddenly you are spring into action because your conscious mind, your conscious part of your mind, to be more correct, is now focused on the activity. While it's focused, you'll do it. And then once you do it, you slip back into the old way of doing things. You won't exercise, you won't eat well, you won't do your homework, you won't study for a test, you won't prepare your presentation in advance, and so on.
Oh, that totally makes sense. I totally fall into that trap, so I totally get it.
We all do.
Can you give us any advice, anyone who's listening, about how we can be, I guess, more aware of our unconscious, or maybe it's okay that we're not? Can you tell us a little bit about what you think about that?
Most of the time, it's okay that you're not. We didn't evolve to behave this way because it didn't work. Evolution and nature didn't just build us to be all messed up. However, if you want to understand your unconscious processes better and adapt even better to the world, or realize what kind of a person you are and what motivates you and so on, one avenue, it's long term and it's expensive in terms of time and money, but it works, is psychotherapy. Something not quite as challenging and not quite as effective is to notice what you do as opposed to what you say. So for example, we did a study on values. And if you ask people what their top values are, people can rank order them. There's a measure that does that. It's not important what the name of it is, but it's the Schwartz circumplex. And the top three values tend to be things like helpfulness, finding your own path. I'm trying to remember the third one. It'll come to me. It doesn't occur to me offhand. In any case, everyone will agree. Yes, I think it's very important to be helpful. I think it's very important to find your own path. But then when you measure things associatively to find out what people's unconscious values are, they tend to be security, honoring tradition, and Freud was right, sex. So now think about how you actually spend your time. Do you spend all of your time working in soup kitchens and trying to make the world a better place? Or do you actually spend your time trying to feel more secure by earning a living, taking care of your family, living in a good neighborhood? And I think the answer is clear for most of us. So there's an example of you have a conscious value, but you will not act on it unless it's in your head. Now, if you want to act on it more, you need to start to act on it till it becomes unconscious, because practice makes something unconscious. It automates something. And then you can start doing that. And in psychotherapy, what we try to do is first make the unconscious conscious, meaning you become aware of what's going on and how you actually behave. And then you have to start practicing, if you want to change, doing it a more adaptive way so that you now make the conscious unconscious and it occurs more frequently and on its own. So those are exercises you can do if you want to really work at it.
Wow, I love it. You know, I always learn from you. And I know you're laughing because you are my husband, but I do learn from you all the time.
Thank God.
So, you know, I want to thank you for giving me this time, because I know that you probably would have preferred to be sitting on the couch, right? But
no, I'm always helping people and finding my own path. That's what I'm all my time doing.
But thank you for giving me this time tonight. And truly, I do really love the work that you're doing with the unconscious. I think it's so fascinating and so important for us to, you know, get a better grasp on how we think about ourselves and how we feel unconsciously about things. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the After 40 podcast with Dr. Deborah Heiser, part of the ITSP Magazine podcast network. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then add this show to your favorite podcast player, subscribe to the ITSP Magazine YouTube channel, and share the ITSP Magazine podcast network with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to connect your brand to our conversations and our audience, visit itspmagazine.com to learn how to sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey.